And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn. Winter has definitely settled in, hasn't it? Oh, we'll moderate a bit. In fact, I think by the weekend we may ease off a bit. But boy, today, tomorrow, if we get that 2 to 4 inches tonight that they're talking about, we'll not only be bitterly cold, but we'll be slipping and sliding around a little bit. We have several guests on the program today. We'll meet our first guest in just a second here. He's sitting with us in the studio. Coming up a little bit later, I'm anxious to speak with Dr. Daniel Amen. He's a medical doctor, a psychiatrist, and he's written a number of books on brain health, memory, that sort of thing. And, hey, as we age, everybody's worried about this these days, right? Aging. Losing it, Alzheimer's or other forms of dementia. So we'll talk with Dr. Amen. You may have seen him on TV. He's done, eight or nine shows on PBS, public broadcasting. He'll be with us later on the program today. And we have some other guests lined up as well. But first of all, we're going to talk about The Lion in Winter, which is a marvelous, marvelous play. And you have a chance to see it this weekend at the Butler Little Theater. And our guest to tell us all about it is Michael Dittman, who's the founder and director of The Lab. Michael, good to see you again. Nice to have you here.
Hey, always a pleasure, Dave. Thanks for having me in.
Yeah. The Lion in Winter is this weekend?
Yeah, this Saturday, one night only. Mm-hmm. Doors are opening at 7. The show starts at 7:30. It's a great show. You and I were talking about it beforehand. It's a wonderful holiday show. You know, it's set at Christmas, so it's... We have a fantastic cast. It's going to be a lot of fun.
This is a special. This is not part of the regular Butler Little Theater playbill, but The Lab has done a number of readers' theaters there now over the past couple of years. Admission is $5, right?
Yeah, $5. It's a cheap date. And mm-hmm. We're not it's not an official BLT main stage sort of production, but the BLT board has been fantastic in working with us to put on these sort of oddball plays or big plays that would be harder to produce, but are sort of just fantastic to be heard mm-hmm. aloud.
Yeah, there are many reasons why a local community theater and amateur theater is unable to tackle certain shows. Now, some of them are obvious. What was the play about Vietnam, Saigon, that has a helicopter in it?
Oh, yes, I know exactly what you're talking
something
about.
Something about Goodbye Saigon,
yeah.
Something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you can do that on Broadway. Your average community theater is not going to have a helicopter.
Right, no budget for that.
Yeah, that they're going to have on stage. So, but there are other reasons. The rights might be too expensive.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You might have too big a cast do at amateur level. A variety of different reasons. So you're able to cut some of those costs and some of those obstructions by doing readers' theater. Many of our listeners will know what that is. Some will not.
That's right.
Explain it for us.
With readers' theater, we do the entire play. But what happens is we have, in this case, the 8 characters. They're sitting on stage, and the readers perform it with their voices. So there's not staging. There's not, for instance, there's a sword fight in The Lion in Winter, and we don't actually have that sword fight. We have a narrator who describes the action, and then the actors use their voices mm-hmm. to create the character, to create the movement, to create the idea of what's going on. It's kind of almost like a radio drama in many ways.
It's interesting because, number one, you have to use your imagination, which is part of the fun of live theater to begin with. And number two, you can see the actors performing. They're all sitting there, usually with a a script stand of some sort, right. A music stand or something like that. And they are emoting and acting even though they're sitting on a stool or a chair.
Absolutely. And it's the actors love it because it's very challenging for them. You know, they are on stage the whole time. It's all dependent on their voice. You know, even though it's a one-night-only show, we have 2 weeks of rehearsals where the actors are thinking about the characters and working through the different voices. So it's still a lot of work for them, and a lot of them love it because it's so challenging to create that character without the costumes, without the big movements.
Absolutely. And by the way, a lot of big professional theaters do readers' theater on occasion, too. And we'll talk about that a little bit as we go along. But let's talk about the show, The Lion in Winter. Some of our listeners will have seen the film version, if they're not familiar with the live stage version. Peter O'Toole and Katharine Hepburn. How about that for a powerhouse
boy,
cast?
Classic, beautiful film. One of my favorites. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I love it, too. I just saw it 3 or 4 months ago on Turner Classic Movies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fantastic story. It's set in Christmas in 1183. And
that's back a few years, folks. By the way, you heard Michael correctly. The year 1183, so we're in the Middle Ages.
That's right, yeah, absolutely. And Henry II has brought his wife Eleanor of Aquitaine out of prison, where he has her kept for Christmas. It's set at Christmas, which is, of course, one of the reasons why we're doing it for the holiday. He's going to ask her for an annulment. Meanwhile, we have the three sons, Richard, Geoffrey, and John, sort of plotting behind everyone's back to find out who's going to get the crown. And we have Henry's young lover, Alice, trying to manipulate a way to get Eleanor and the children, all three sons, back in jail as well. So it's...
You have to put yourself in the mode of English and French royalty.
Yes.
Back at this time, folks, because their marriages and family life were nothing like ours.
No.
Today. We could never, even our most distressed marriages would never match these. I said French because this actually, it's set in France, right? Present-day France.
Yeah, in present-day France, yeah. Yeah, in Anjou. Is where it's set, and that's part of the play as well, where Henry's trying to figure out how to keep all of his land in France that he's conquered, and also his conflict with King Philip mm-hmm. Of France, and they're at the edge of war as well. There's a lot of brinkmanship. So, yeah, but at the same time, it's also very funny. I don't want people to think this is just a political thriller. It's got comedy, it's got drama, it's got romance, it's got passion. It's just a great, great show.
We have to remember that these countries, well, England was pretty much the same as it is now, yeah. But there was no Germany, and that was a whole, you know, independent baronies. France was not the France that we know today. You might wonder about why would an English king, Henry II, have a castle in France. Well, the English went back and forth on this. The English would invade France.
Mm-hmm.
They would seize territory, seize people. Mm-hmm. And then the French, the Normans in particular,
right.
From Normandy, the Normans, would cross the channel and invade England.
Yeah.
And so this happened back and forth many times over the centuries.
And Shakespeare draws upon these stories,
yes.
too, so there's
mm-hmm.
a lot of groundwork there.
Now, this is Henry II. I do have the right Henry.
Yeah, yeah.
Henry,
yep. Henry II. Mm-hmm.
So the most famous Henry that everybody knows is Henry VIII.
Yeah.
He was the profligate, you know, no vice was too much for Henry VIII, whether
right.
it was an extra piece of turkey leg or an extra wife.
Yeah, right,
you know,
yeah.
He did anything he wanted to. But this is well before Henry VIII. This is Henry II.
This is, yeah. This is Henry II. And the second has his own worldly pleasures as well, but I'm not sure anybody can compete with Henry VIII when it came to debauchery.
Nonetheless, let's just take a little bit of this plot line here. And folks, we're not spilling the beans.
That's right.
This is, believe me, we're not. This is, and many times it's a very funny play, even though it's, we're talking about very serious things here. Henry II decides it's Christmas time, so he's going to let his wife Eleanor of Aquitaine out of prison for the Christmas holiday. He's the guy that imprisoned her.
That's right. It's very big of him.
And yeah. He's held her in prison for, I think it's for like 10 years.
Yeah, yeah, at least.
Look, it's Christmas. I'm going to let you out of prison for a week. I'll be in. We'll talk, you know. I mean, what a guy.
Yeah, big-hearted. Yeah, and he and Eleanor have this fantastic love-hate relationship. You know, they've been married for so long, but of course, Henry's put Eleanor in prison. But at the same time, you know, there's still some affection there, and they sort of go back and forth in this almost romantic comedy with an edge sort of way. Mm-hmm. You know, he asks, at one scene, she asks him, "Did you ever love me?" And he says no, and she says, "Well, then this will make this so much easier," referring to all the machinations she's about to undergo to try to depose him.
Well, there's one line, and you mentioned this in your press release. Folks, we're talking with Michael Dittman. He's the founder of The Lab. You just call it The Lab, right?
Yeah, we just call it The Lab, mm-hmm. And along with my wife, Amy, is also the co-founder.
Mm-hmm. And it went to Lab Theater is what it is,
yeah.
And they are presenting a Reader's Theater a version of The Lion in Winter, a holiday play at the Butler Little Theater this Saturday evening. I forget what I was going to say. The one of the funny lines in the show. Remember, folks, this is a Christmas show. A bit of dialogue. "Well, what shall we hang, the holly or each other?"
Yeah. It's when they decided to decorate the castle to make it a little more festive, and Eleanor picks up the piece of holly and has that fantastic line as they begin quipping back and forth while they're decorating the castle as well.
I have not seen the live stage version, so I'm anxious to see it. I've seen the film with Peter O'Toole and Katharine Hepburn a number of times. I can just see Katharine Hepburn giving that line. And by the way, that gives us a little bit of an insight into Eleanor's character as well, Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Mm-hmm,
okay,
mm-hmm.
She's been held prisoner in this castle by her husband for 10 years. He lets her out for the holidays. He actually, I think, wants to discuss dissolution of the marriage, right?
That's right, yeah. He's going to claim an annulment after they've had three children.
what a guy. But she's a very strong character, and this is Eleanor of Aquitaine.
Yeah.
She's a very strong character herself.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. You know, James Goldman says in the play that she's 61 but has a deep steel within her. And Amy Dittman, my wife, actually plays Eleanor, and she really captures that sort of courtly behavior where everything's smooth and butter wouldn't melt on your mouth. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, a real, you know, it's the old iron fist in the velvet glove sort of thing. And she captures that really well in her interaction with Henry, who's being played by Ron Lockwood, is a fantastic theater veteran here in Butler. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I know Ron very well. The Eleanor character is actually older than Henry. By the way, these people really existed.
Yeah.
All of these characters, they were real back in the 1100s, 1183. However, I think the playwright, James Goldman, I mean, this actual incident is made up, right?
That's right. And he says in his notes that, you know, it's a completely made up, and that a lot of the Christmas traditions that they talk about weren't actually part of Christmas in 1153.
Mm-hmm.
But it's real people and a fictitious situation. You know, we have, as you said, Eleanor's 11 years older than Henry. Henry's girlfriend is 27 years younger than Henry. And they're real people. This really happened. Yeah. But we don't know that they all met at Christmas at this time.
Alice was Henry's girlfriend / mistress. Young, very young.
Yeah.
Much younger than him. Well, when you're the king, right?
That's right.
Back in those days.
Yeah.
Eleanor presumably knew about this. This woman, the mistress, is here, right? She's in the castle.
Yeah, there's this wonderful part where Eleanor is talking to Alice, and Alice actually came to live at the court when she was 8, and Eleanor raised her as one of her own children. And then, of course, once Eleanor was sent to prison, Henry took Alice as her lover, and And Alice is very cold towards Eleanor, but Eleanor still has a great deal of affection for her and says, you know, remember when you used to sit on my lap and I'd braid your hair? Come and give me a hug. Mm-hmm. Because Alice is very sort of wary around her, not sure how she'll react. So
naturally,
that's yeah.
Naturally so. Is there any threat implied or otherwise that the king might actually do away with Eleanor? You know, they sent a lot of people to the... the executioner's block back in those days, sometimes at the drop of a hat.
I think, you know, I think Henry certainly threatens that sort of thing, but, you know, we get the idea from his character that he would never actually do that, that he still has enough affection for Eleanor that would be too much. He'll put her back in jail, without a doubt, but actually killing her, I think, would be a step too far for him.
He wants an annulment after they've had three children together?
Yes, he's convinced that he's going to be able to talk the Pope into offering an annulment, even though they've had three. He says, you know, the populace will be amazed that we never consummated the relationship and had three children.
Is he delusional?
No, he's just a master manipulator.
Uh-huh.
You know, he talks about shifting lands back and forth. One of the reasons that he loves Alice so much is that she has the title to a piece of land that he thinks is really important to the kingdom. And we see him manipulating his sons as well, sort of playing them off of each other, promising things, taking things back. At one point, he promises Alice to two of them. and then calls it off dramatically. So he's not insane. He knows what he's doing throughout the entire play. He's just in very many ways amoral.
The Eleanor and Henry have more than three kids. Hasn't one of them just died?
One of them has died. Yeah, and that had sort of a sad. The favorite has died, and there's a sad undertone and about him being buried beneath them. In the tombs while they're fighting about this on the upper floors of the castle.
Meanwhile, one of the sons, one of the surviving sons, pretty famous. Most people will have heard, they may not know who he is or much about him, but they've certainly heard the name, Richard the Lionheart,
yeah.
One of their kids, right?
Absolutely, and he is a soldier through and through. It's interesting to see the three sons, how they're being portrayed, John, Jeffrey, and Richard. And Jeff Carey is Richard, and he really brings a... you know, a tough macho, but still very clear-eyed and clear-headed view of Richard to that part.
Mm-hmm. Is he like a, I don't know, like a Lancelot character? Now I'm going to Camelot, so I'm mixing my metaphors here. But, you know, handsome, debonair,
yes,
romantic
exactly.
Guy.
Yeah, he's handsome, he's graceful. You know, when he walks into a room, people turn to see who it is. He's a man of action for sure. Really just, you know, the like, as you're suggesting, the knight. When you think of a knight, mm-hmm. we think of Richard the Lionhearted.
Do the sons come into conversation with their parents one at a time? Is there ever a part of the play where they're all together there at the same time?
Yeah, there's some great sections, actually, where John, he's the youngest, and he's being played by Tyler Pollock, who does a fantastic job. Tyler's a young man who I saw acting up at Butler County Community College and, mm-hmm. and knew that I wanted to work with him. He plays John, who's young, not that bright. They say at one point that he smells like compost. and he is being manipulated by Jeffrey, the middle son. And Eleanor is trying to manipulate Jeffrey. Henry is manipulating Richard and Jeffrey. They're playing the sons against each other to try to move their own ends forward. And there's finally a breaking point at the climax of the play where they're all together and this all comes to a head and you see this sort of family drama play out.
Jeffrey, the other son, is also older. You said John's the youngest.
Yeah, John's 16, Jeffrey's 25. Mm-hmm. And Jeffrey is probably the smartest of the three. He's in many ways he's like Henry in that he can play mental chess and see two or three moves ahead about where he should be. But at the same time, he's also very sad because he feels like Eleanor and Henry have never truly loved him. And even though he's a grown man of 25, he's still, you know, at times in the play he says, "What about Jeffrey? You know, when is it going to be Jeffrey's turn? Why does everyone talk about Richard? Why don't we talk about Jeffrey?" And that definitely leaves him open to manipulation.
Tough part. Who do you have playing that part?
Jeffrey is being played by Justin Anderson, who he's worked with the Lab many times before. He's one of my favorite actors. He's done some great work on BLT main stage as well, and he really captures that role well.
He can also sing, by the way.
I didn't know that. I've never heard him sing. Yeah. Wow.
So you have these three, even though they're different ages, Jeffrey and Richard are the two older. I'm assuming that there's a rivalry there because one of them, presumably, is going to become king, right?
That's right. And
someday.
John says over and over again in the sort of snide way, well, you know I'm daddy's favorite. You know that I'll get to be king. And the other two either ignore him or thump him on the back of the head or sort of send him off on a ridiculous errand. They don't really take him seriously, even though John believes that he's going to be king. The other two are pretty sure one way or another that's not going to happen.
Are these three sons real people too?
Yeah, these three are real people. You know, like you said, Richard the Lionhearted, one of the famous
crusade.
Yeah,
right?
Yep, absolutely. And we actually used him. People may have seen the posters around town, and we actually had a beautiful banner made for the stage as well with the lion for Richard the Lionhearted. Mm-hmm. That family.
So, what about Alice, the young, very young. Latest love interest of the king. Who do you have playing that part?
Alice was really difficult to cast because she needs to be young, of course, and she's naive at the beginning in many ways. You know, she's only 23. She's been very sheltered, and when we see her at the beginning, she's very much this sort of not exactly a damsel in distress, but certainly a naif. And what happens throughout the play is that she begins to, through osmosis and by watching these two, Henry and Eleanor, go at each other, she starts to figure out, well, you know, this is how I need to act as well. This is how I need to learn how to manipulate people. Until when we get to the end of the play, and I don't think I'm giving anything away, she tells Henry, well, you need to put your three sons in prison. Never let them see the light of day again. And so she goes through this incredible transformation. I end up casting the young actress, Gabby LaCella, in it. And I'd seen Gabby perform at BC3 in the same show that Tyler was in as well. And it's, you know, she's a fantastic young actress. She's done a lot of work on the Zelian Opal area over towards there. I don't know. I think this is her first experience at the BLT. But she brings some depth to the character that's difficult for a young actress to master. And she does a really nice job.
There's only one other character that we haven't mentioned. And hang on, folks. That's the King of France, of course, Philip II. We mentioned the King of France. So what's the image, folks, that you have in your mind for the King of France? He's 18 years old, right?
Yeah, exactly right. Yep, a very young man. You know, the age of a lot of high school students. And
that happened a lot back in these days.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
You had boy kings who were even younger than that.
Yeah, yeah, with their advisors whispering in their ears. John Carlson is playing Philip. John Carlson's done work at the BLT before. He is fantastic because he has that boyishness of an 18-year-old, but he still has that sort of iron spine that a king would have. And there are fantastic scenes where Henry and Philip are arguing with each other, and it becomes clear that Henry's just trying to teach him, actually, by giving him a rough time. You know, the old tough love sort of thing. You know, he says, well, you know, I'll crush you. And Philip says, fine, and walks away. And Henry, no, that's not how a king does it. This is how a king does it. And he tells him, try it again. You know, and so even though they're rivals, Henry really does sort of enjoy sort of teaching him the diplomacy and the brinksmanship that John is going to, Philip is going to need in order to be a successful king.
This must be a fun play to do, to watch for that matter, because of the back and forth. These obviously there's this manipulation for power, manipulation just for fun sometimes, and yet at other times it's just hilariously funny.
Yeah, it really is. Eleanor has some lines that are just, you know, that cracked us up in the first couple rehearsals when we were reading them. You know, the sons, when they're all working together, you know, it's hard at times not to see a little Three Stooges action when they're all trapped in the in the cellar tapping the wine barrels and trying to figure out whether they're going to live or die. It's fantastic. The actors love it, and the audience is just going to be, I think, just really pleased with how funny it is.
We're talking about The Lion in Winter refers to Henry.
Yeah.
Although he's not, well, I guess for that time he would have been considered getting old anyway.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But Eleanor, considerably older than him. So already setting the stage for this incredible number of queens in England who serve seemingly forever.
You know, right.
We have Queen Elizabeth right now, Queen Elizabeth II, who just recently became the longest reigning monarch in English history, and that covers a lot of territory.
Isn't that amazing?
But, you know, it's not all that long ago, a century, a little more, we had Queen Victoria, who reigned for, I don't know, 60 or 70 years or something like that.
Yeah, and Eleanor has been queen for 46 years at the time that we see her, and she has definitely learned how to be her own person in what's really a man's world at this time.
Mm-hmm.
So she's been around. She knows which levers to pull.
So when we think of the title "The Lion in Winter," does Henry realize that he's aging? That this is the winter of his life?
He really does. Geoffrey has a great line where he says to his father, "You know, roar at me, lion, and show me your yellow teeth." And Henry is completely aware that he is reaching sort of the end. You know, at one point he talks about, you know, how much longer do I have? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to be here when I'm 80. John makes fun of him and says, you know, you're strong now, but I'm young and I can wait. And so there's definitely that idea that floats over it where Henry sort of feels like, well, maybe this is my last chance to really get things set the way that I want them to and to get my boys ready to take the reign.
No wonder Shakespeare mined this rich minefield so many times for his plays. Huh?
Absolutely, absolutely. And actually, there's a TV show that I'm not completely familiar with, but a friend was telling me, Empire on Fox, which apparently is based on The Lion in Winter. It's a show about a hip-hop record label, but the creators took The Lion in Winter and updated it. So it really is a, you know, like you said, it's one of these stories like Shakespeare where you can just apply these human feelings to any generation, at any time, and really understand them.
I was checking to see, because I knew this play was successful on Broadway. I knew, of course, Peter O'Toole playing Henry in the film, opposite Katharine Hepburn. But I was shocked to see that Robert Preston played King Henry in the original Broadway production. Robert Preston, the music man.
Yes, that's what that was
the
my
guy
first
that
thought.
Courted Marion the Librarian, for goodness sakes. I just couldn't see it in my mind's eye.
We got trouble right here in the castle.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I think probably because O'Toole was so good.
Yeah.
You know, and actually, they were so good because of each other. Hepburn was good because of O'Toole, and O'Toole was good because of Hepburn.
Yeah, they had a great on-screen presence together,
now,
absolutely.
This is Lab Theater, if you're going on Saturday night, this Saturday. As Michael said, the actors are all sitting on stage with the script in front of them. And do they wear black? Is that standard procedure for Lab Theater?
Yeah, so the actors will be dressed in black pants or black skirt and white shirt to sort of, you know, provide uniformity and really allow the audience to focus on the words. We do have a couple wardrobe surprises for the people for the audience that shows up. I won't give it away, but we're excited about those. Standard attire for us is white shirt and black bottom.
Now, I saw the Lab did The Weir this fall, a Connor McPherson play at the Little Theater, also Reader's Theater. It was fantastic.
Oh, thank you. We had a blast.
I enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah, that was a great show. The audience was fantastic. The actors were great. Everything just really came together for that show, and I'm really sure that it'll be the same for The Lion in Winter.
I'd seen The Weir previously at the O'Reilly down in Pittsburgh, which is an equity company, and you were up there. This was good.
Oh, hey,
now
thank
some
you.
Of the some of the characters did leave the stage occasionally.
Yes, yes.
It was the nature of that show.
Mm-hmm.
Does that happen in this one as well?
Yes, actually, Philip will leave the stage, but overall they'll be on all the time. With our interpretation of Reader's Theater, if we were doing a full staging, the character was going to be gone for a while. A lot of times we'll have them leave just so that, you know, it intensifies the attention the audience can pay on the people who are there. So we do have that sort of change.
Well, I enjoy it. You don't get to see it all that often. But part of the magic of live theater to me is the use of the imagination on the part of the audience becomes a part of the show. And, you know, if you're doing a long run of a show, it's different every night.
Yeah.
Depending on the audience and the audience reaction and how much they're buying into it and their imagination. I did some shows many, many years ago at the old Silver Fox Summer Barn Theater up in St. Petersburg, which is no longer in existence, hasn't been for 25 years. But it was arena theater. The audience was all around you. And, you know, you would do shows where there are windows and doors. Most shows have that.
Right.
Well, it was impossible. You couldn't have windows and doors.
Sure.
And so you mimed them. You know, the audience used their imagination and they bought right into it, you know.
Yeah.
And they feel like stakeholders, I think, when you do that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like this they're part of the show. You know, it's this sort of communal experience. And that's one of the nice things about Reader's Theater, too. If you've never been to a theater production and you're looking for sort of a low-stress introduction to theater, you know, this is a great way to do it because you really do get drawn in. You know, it's like those actors are talking to you and you're part of the story. That narrator is sort of, you know, the guide who's between you and the actors and sort of leading you through that story. So it's a great introductory experience.
I mentioned earlier that there are some professional companies, some equity companies, paid actors, paid staff that do Reader's Theater occasionally. Pittsburgh Classical is one.
Yeah,
down
2 weeks
in Pittsburgh,
ago.
Picked Theater, yeah. They usually do one or two every year. Mm-hmm. It gives you an opportunity to see a show. There's either no time or no money to mount a full stage production, but you can see it done live.
Absolutely.
Reader's Theater.
Yeah.
And they're very popular.
I was actually at the Carnegie Library this fall getting some plays, and I wandered past one of their meeting rooms, and there was Reader's Theater. It was a group of young people, and there's probably an audience of 25 people watching them, and they were doing a show about Anne Frank, and it was just fantastic to see them. You know, they probably wouldn't have been able to do a full production of the Anne Frank story, but there they were. You know, they got a room, and they were doing a fantastic job.
So you're not on stage for this one?
I am not on stage for this one. I'm directing it, and I'm doing the lighting design, so I'll be up in the booth for this one.
But you were on stage in The Weir.
I was. It was very enjoyable. It had been a long time since I'd been on the stage. So.
Is that a challenge to be, I've always wondered about that, being directing the show and then being in it at the same time?
Yeah, it was a huge challenge. Because it was a lot more work to stay in character while I'm doing the show and also keeping part of my brain on the other characters to make sure that they're sort of meeting the vision that I have. And so it was a good experience, but it was definitely difficult.
What's the modus operandi? You have a week or 2 weeks of rehearsal? Do you give the cast members the script so that they can read it over before they come in?
They get the script ahead of time. We have the show set up usually a couple months in advance. So once we have a cast put together, they get the scripts as early as I can get them to them, and then we have 2 weeks of rehearsal, three days a week, 4 days a week, something like that, and then a dress rehearsal. We'll have dress rehearsal this Friday, and then the big night.
Curtain time is?
Curtain time, 7:30. Doors open at 7.
Early in, early out.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. You can get a late dinner afterwards if you want.
Admission is $5 for this Reader's Theater at the Butler Little Theater, which is a half block off Main Street, right at the bottom of North Main Street Hill. Mm-hmm. No reservations or anything?
Nope. No pre-sales. Pay at the door, and that's how that'll work.
Mm-hmm. The Lion in Winter. It's a really splendid show. As I say, I've seen the film version probably four or five times. I'm anxious to see the stage version.
Great.
It'll be different. Richard the Lion Horn. Oh, by the way, I wanted to ask, and I'm sorry, I forgot. Do you know anything about this James Goldman guy who who wrote this play? I mean, obviously he was familiar with English history, or maybe with Shakespeare, maybe with both. I don't know.
I know very little about him. You know, he was not, he's not one of those names who you see over and over again.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this one great show, and then sort of peters off into nowhere.
Kind of like To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah.
And he wrote the show in the mid-60s sometime, yep. I don't know.
Yeah, it was 65, 66, something like that.
It was on Broadway, and then very shortly thereafter, the film version was done. James Goldman. Michael Dittman visiting with us today. Michael, by the way, is a you're a professor at BC3, right?
I am, yeah. Yeah, I'm an English professor up there at BC3. Fantastic place to work.
Mm-hmm. Nice to see you.
It's always a pleasure.
More to come on It's Your Turn today. Nice to have you with us on this frigid, and it's still pretty frigid, Wednesday. Stick with us. We're going to take a break. Coming up, we're going to be talking about your brain and memory and aging and worries about dementia and all that sort of thing with a physician, Daniel Amen, M.D., psychiatrist, and he's a well-known writer about the brain and neuroscience and all that sort of thing. Plus, he's been on PBS many, many, many times. Not the only place that he's been, but he's done a lot of those series, those medical shows on public broadcasting. He'll be chatting with us. He's not in Butler. We'll be chatting with him on the telephone coming up in just a moment or so. And we will be back to talk with him right after we talk about our good friends at DBS Telecommunications, local telephone equipment dealer and a data network installer, serving not only the Butler area, the whole Butler, in fact, Pittsburgh area too, pretty much all of western Pennsylvania. DBS Telecommunications has been around for more than 30 years. We know them well because we've utilized their expertise. We've had their technicians here at Butler Radio Network many, many times. They sell, install, and repair telephones for your office, phone systems. They install custom-designed networks, including fiber optics. It's the latest technology. They design and install high-quality hybrid digital telephone systems, high-definition surveillance camera systems. Everybody needs those these days. Multi-door entry access systems, overhead commercial paging. And they also provide cabling for voice or data or cable television wiring in both industrial and commercial applications. You can call them today to get more information. DBS Telecommunications, 724-285-9088, or check them out online at dbs-tel.com. DBS Telecommunications.
Looking for a way to make your company's benefit package a little more competitive? Here's one that's so easy, more than 130 local organizations and businesses have added it to their programs. Membership in Armco Credit Union. At Armco Credit Union, your employees will have access to the best loan rates and more free banking services, while direct deposit and payroll deduction options make it convenient for both of you. And best of all, it doesn't cost you a thing. Learn more at armcocu.com or by calling 284-2020. Armco Credit Union is an equal opportunity lender and is insured by NCUA.
Going to be talking about something. Listeners, I say this issue is on almost everyone's mind these days. It's the brain. It's memory loss. It's aging. It's dementia. And we're going to talk can't think of a better person to talk about it with than Dr. Daniel Amen, M.D. He has written a new book called Memory Rescue: Supercharge Your Brain, Reverse Memory Loss, and Remember What Matters Most. First of all, Dr. Amen, nice to meet you. Boy, it's terrific to have you with us on the program here for a few minutes.
Thank you so much for helping me talk about memory rescue.
As I mentioned, I can't think of anybody who doesn't wonder about this and worry about this these days, maybe especially dementia. As we age, our memory starts to go a little bit, doesn't it? I mean, that's a natural part of getting older.
Well, it's common, but it doesn't have to. And what it indicates is that your brain is deteriorating. It's suffering. And most people are afraid of it, but they don't know there are things they can do about it. And the idea behind memory rescue is if you want to keep your brain healthy, or rescue it if you think it's headed for trouble, you have to prevent or treat the 11 major risk factors that steal your mind. And we know what they are, and the great news is that almost all of them are preventable or treatable.
Well, I wanted to address that first off, because you say in your book, if you or someone you love is starting to struggle a little bit with recall or with memory, even if it seems to be insignificant, now is the time to get serious about the health of your brain, right?
Well, you know, one of the horrifying things we learned at Amen Clinics, I have 8 clinics around the country, we've learned this, but other researchers have published it too, is that things like Alzheimer's disease actually start in your brain decades before you have any symptoms. So by the time your symptoms are really beginning to bother you, it's not early in the process, it's actually later in the process. And so I want people to get excited about brain health and prevention of things like Alzheimer's disease as early as possible.
A little bit, listeners, about our guest. Some of you will know him. You've probably seen him on public television. He's produced a number of shows about the brain that have aired on public TV. But just a little bit of his background. Dr. Daniel Amen is a physician. He is a double board certified psychiatrist. In fact, he's been named America's favorite psychiatrist by the Washington Post. He's the founder of what he mentioned, Amen Clinics. He has, he's a distinguished fellow of the American Psychiatric Association. His work has been featured in, Time, Newsweek, ABC World News, 2020, BBC, New York Times, all over the place. So obviously he knows of what he speaks. You start out your book by explaining to people just how the brain works. And do you do this in layperson's terms, Dr. Amen?
I do. It's really easy to understand. I mean, over the years, what I've learned is the simpler you can say something, really, the smarter you are. And none of this is hard. So there are 11 sort of core chapters about each risk factor. And so I'll tell you what they are, how they happen, and then what to do about them. Mm-hmm. And at the end of each chapter, it's like, well, here's 10 things to do about blood flow. And pick one. Because I know if you pick one and you start to feel better, you're going to pick two. And if you pick two, well, ultimately you're going to pick four. And that begins to truly transform your life.
You organize your book around your mnemonic device called Bright Minds, BRIGHTMINDS. Can you briefly walk us through just what that means, Dr. Amen?
So, again, to reverse memory loss, you have to tackle all the risk factors. And so the 11 I put together in the mnemonic, which is a memory device called Bright Minds. So B is for blood flow. Low blood flow is the number one brain imaging predictor of Alzheimer's disease. And I talk about, well, what causes that? Hypertension, heart disease, caffeine, nicotine, not exercising. Mm-hmm. And, well, how do you reverse that? Okay, so you get rid of things that constrict blood flow, like caffeine and nicotine. You start exercising. And simple things like beets, cayenne pepper, rosemary, the supplements ginkgo and vinpocetine can boost blood flow. So each of the chapters are organized like that. R is retirement and aging. When you stop learning, your brain starts dying. New learning needs to be part of every day of your life. I is for inflammation, which damages every organ in your body, especially your brain. And G is genetics. And that's really important because people often have a fatalistic view about genetics. If I have it in my family, there's nothing I can do. And that's just completely not true. And so I talk about the science of how you can turn on or off certain genes that make illness more or less likely in your future. And I think that's really exciting. Genes are not a death sentence. They should be a wake-up call for you to get serious.
Hmm. That takes us up to G. What about H in Bright, B-R-I-G-H-T?
So H is critically important and often overlooked. H is for head trauma. 2 million new brain injuries a year in the United States. Amen Clinics did the first and the largest study on active and retired NFL players. We scanned and treated over 200 players at a time when the NFL had trouble with the truth. Playing football causes long-term brain damage. No question about that. But 80% of our professional NFL players show improvement in as little as 2 months when we put them on our Bright Minds program.
And then T, toxins, that's poisons, right?
It's poison, and, you know, the obvious ones are drugs, alcohol, not a health food. But there's insidious ones that we've learned about, like the toxins in your personal products. So you need to start reading the labels, because whatever goes on your body goes in your body. Pesticides from food, mold exposure, if you've had water damage in your house or they have it at work. Think firefighters for a second. They are the true heroes in our country. It's not football players, it's firefighters and first responders. But they're often exposed. I'm in California now, we're having these terrible fires. So they're exposed to inhaling carbon monoxide, cyanide. And if you mix that with the head traumas they experience from falls and things falling on them, and the emotional trauma that they experience from, you know, seeing the horrific things they see, that's really the prescription for a troubled brain. We should be rehabilitating their brains all the way through.
We're talking for listeners who have joined us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. We're talking with Dr. Daniel Amen, M.D., about his latest book. It's the latest in a series of books, all bestsellers, that he's written about brain and brain health. This latest one is called Memory Rescue. I need to take a quick break here. We are able to talk with Dr. Amen for a few more minutes, so we'll pick up our conversation with him here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. Special announcement from the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. They're going to be having their end-of-quarter sale this coming Saturday. That's December 16th, this Saturday. You know, the end-of-quarter sale at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store. 50% off on all items. This Saturday only, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. They're in the Greater Butler Mart. The Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store is about three or four doors up from the Friedman's Fresh Market supermarket. That same side of Greater Butler Mart. End of quarter sale this Saturday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. 50% off on all items, excludes the 99-cent Saturday night sale and new bedding. Society of St. Vincent de Paul, free parking right outside the door. And remember, all store profits remain in Butler County to help the less fortunate. We stand tallest when we stoop to help others. That's what they like to say. At the Society of St. Vincent de Paul, thrift store in Butler, Greater Butler Mart, Route 8 South.
Are you searching for the perfect holiday gift for someone you care about? Well, look no further. Personalized photo calendars from Sir Speedy Printing are great gifts that last the whole year. Everyone will love the personal touch that you were able to put into your gift and appreciate the memories that come back with every picture you chose. Be the hero of holiday gifts with the help of Sir Speedy Printing on South Main Street in Butler. Stop in or give us a call today.
The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome back. My name is Dave Mularkey, and on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, we're very pleased to be able to chat with Daniel Amen, Dr. Amen, MD, author of Memory Rescue. I just wanted to very quickly mention the rest of your mnemonic that we were talking about earlier in our conversation, Doctor. MINDS, M-I-N-D-S. M is for mental health. I is for immunity, infection issues. N is for neurohormone deficiencies. I have to confess, I did not know that we had neurohormones. What are those, Doctor?
Well, they're like Miracle-Gro for your brain. Things like thyroid, testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, DHEA. Critical to know what your levels are and to optimize them. One of my public television shows I did with my wife, you know, I look at her and go, so why do our hormones drop with age? And she goes, well, it's the planet's way of getting rid of you. And I don't know about you, but I'm not okay with that. And so I think whatever your age, you should have your hormones level measured and then optimized. And it doesn't mean you have to take, you know, testosterone, for example, but there's simple things you can do to optimize it, like killing sugar and lifting weights. So really, no matter what your age is, if you want to have better testosterone levels, I mean, all of us should really limit sugar as much as possible. And the stronger you are as you age, the less likely you are to get Alzheimer's disease, and the better your testosterone levels. And then, you know, some people clearly need neurohormone replacement, but it's a major risk factor for Alzheimer's disease, and very few people think about it. And they'll often go to their doctor and he'll measure it and goes, oh, your levels are normal. But they never tell you where in the range you are, because I never want to be at the low end. I mean, did you ever really want to be at the low end of your college class or your high school class? Of course not. You want to be optimal. And I think of that for your lab work as well.
I want to mention one more thing. Obviously, Dr. Amen goes into much more detail on all of these issues in his book, Memory Rescue. But the last one in your mnemonic is S. S is for sleep issues. Why is sleep so important to brain health?
Well, when you sleep, and you should sleep on your side as opposed to your stomach or your back, your brain cleans or washes itself. So actually, at night, when you go to sleep, a fluid system opens up in your brain, and it's cleaning it out. If you don't sleep 7 hours a night, trash builds up, which then increases the risk of damage to your brain. In addition, sleep apnea is devastating to brain function. Your brain is the most oxygen-hungry organ in your body. If you snore loudly, stop breathing at night, that actually kills thousands of brain cells every night. So in order to keep your brain healthy, you really have to keep it in an optimal environment, and sleep is important. And the one we didn't talk about was D, for diabesity, and that is just devastating our brain in this country. 40% of us are now obese, so not just overweight. And we published two studies that show as your weight goes up, the size and function of your brain goes down, which should scare the fat off anyone.
The third part of your book talks about food. It has foods to eat, foods to avoid, habits, more tips and strategies to boost your memory. I was looking at the list of foods to avoid or limit. Energy drinks. Huh. Boy, they're advertised all over the place these days. Not so good for you, Doctor.
And they're terrible for your brain. Because, you know, I mean, they're loaded with caffeine, which constricts blood flow to the brain, and sugar at the same time. Sugar is pro-inflammatory, increases erratic brain cell firing. And, yeah, you're going to feel good quickly, and then you're going to feel bad. And I always want people to do things that help them feel better fast, but that makes it last. And so, for example, if you have low energy, theanine from green tea is actually really good and really helpful for many people. And it's about the choices you make. You know, are you making things that help you feel better fast, but last, they're good for your brain, or you do things that help you feel better fast that are bad for your brain?
You had one thing that gave me a little bit of a chuckle. You were talking about why people tend to put off or perhaps eliminate altogether doing something about some of these issues. You said, to save your brain, you have to get your mind right. I kept thinking of Cool Hand Luke when I was reading about this. Luke, you have to get your mind right. Too many people make excuses, right? They may realize that they've got issues here, but they think it's going to be too hard, or they don't want to deprive themselves, or it's too expensive, or they don't want to have time. They make excuse after excuse, doctor.
Well, no question. And what they don't realize is that by doing the wrong thing, they're depriving themselves of what they really want, which is health, energy, longevity, a clear mind. And they go, oh, it's too expensive. And it's like, no, it's not nearly as expensive as being sick. You know, my wife had thyroid cancer when she was young and ended up having to file bankruptcy and drop out of school. Being sick is very expensive. And really, it's a mindset. Do you love yourself or do you hate yourself? One woman once told me I'd rather get Alzheimer's disease than give up sugar. And I just looked at her, and I'm like, did you date the bad boys in school? Because that's a bad relationship. And the people listening, you know, just ask yourself, you know, have you ever been like me and been in a bad relationship? So I was in a, you know, I mean, I've had a couple of bad relationships in the past. They just were not good for me. And I am not going to do that with food. I am only going to love food that loves me back. And you want to just ask yourself, are you in an abusive relationship with food where you crave things that hurt you, or are you in an optimal relationship with food and the things you drink? You know, do they serve your health or do they hurt your health?
What about, and I'm starting to truncate a bit here because our time begins to run short, Dr. Amen, I've been reading about, have you actually even seen advertised mental drills that purport to keep your mind as sharp? Does this really work? And do you have any suggestions in your book about these mental drills?
I do. There's a whole chapter on ways to strengthen your mind, ways to exercise your mind, and working it on a regular basis is very helpful. Listening to the right kind of music can be helpful. I actually have a new album out called Bright Minds Memory Rescue CD. It charted 4 weeks on Billboard's New Age charts because the research shows that listening to certain types of music can optimize your brain. And so the games can help, but if you're smoking and drinking while you're playing the games, they're really not helping you.
You already mentioned physical exercise and the importance of that. I know you talk about this, but you also talk about spiritual practices. That can help you keep and maintain a healthy brain, spiritual practices?
You bet, because things like meditation and prayer, gratitude, appreciation, positive intention can change your brain. You and I talk about a study we did on gratitude and how when you focus on what you love about your life, your brain actually works better than when you're focusing on what you hate about your life.
I have to ask you about one more thing. I don't know, maybe a bit of a leap, but maybe not. All these cases of celebrity inappropriate behavior that we've had in the news recently, is there any connection between sexual harassment and one's brain, doctor?
Well, of course, because your brain controls everything you do. And if you have low activity in the front part of your brain that's involved in things like forethought and judgment, impulse control, empathy, you're more likely to make mistakes. You know, and sexual harassment obviously involves a lack of empathy, and often impulse control issues. You should not let little children hit soccer balls with their head or play tackle football. anything that damages the brain is going to damage your behavior. And if you're on the other end of that, if you've been harassed or abused or molested, that damages your brain and will actually turn on the emotional center so you can't stop thinking about it. So we have to put the brain in the equation of everything we do. And when we start optimizing it, my experience is people actually become more thoughtful, more loving, and they act in healthier ways.
Memory loss, aging, dementia. Tell me, listeners, who doesn't think about this? There are people even wake up in the middle of the night worried about this, right?
Well, no question, but, you know, the whole idea behind memory rescue is you could do something about it, and in the process, everything in your life will be better because your brain is at the center of everything.
You've seen him on TV, on PBS, folks, probably many times, Dr. Daniel Amen, MD, and his newest book is called Memory Rescue. Supercharge your brain, reverse memory loss, and remember what matters most. Dr. Amen, nice to meet you. Thanks for being with us here today. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
More to come on It's Your Turn this Wednesday. We'll be chatting next with Laura Keough about the School Year Survival Cookbook. Laura Keough, one of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program, Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot, home to the tastiest turkeys in western Pennsylvania. And boy, for your upcoming holiday meal or meals, you won't do better than Jones Turkey Farm. And don't forget, for this holiday season now, Dave Jones at Jones Turkey Farm is offering a special as a thank you to his loyal customers down through the years. It's only good from now through December 19th. So you'll have to step on it for this one, December 19th. The Jones Turkey Farm is lowering the price of a frozen turkey from $3.25 a pound to down to just $2.50. That's right. The best turkeys in western Pennsylvania can be yours for just $2.50 a pound, now through December 19th. Visit their website to learn more, jonesturkeyfarm.com. They're local, of course. They're on Jones Road in Cabot. You'll never get it any fresher. Make your holiday season merry with a Jones turkey for the whole family to enjoy. Again, all the details about this special online at jonesturkeyfarm.com. jonesturkeyfarm.com.
Leave the driving up to us. We're going your way. Getting there stops here. Just hop the bus. Easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem. The bus will get you there. 'Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us. We're going your way.
On the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, my name is Dave Malarkey. We chat by telephone with guest Laura Keough. She is a co-author of the School Year Survival Cookbook. First of all, Laura, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Nice to chat with you. How are you?
So what's the theory behind, what's the mission behind your book, the School Year Survival Cookbook?
Well, my co-author and I, as parents, really started, it actually was born from talking to folks like you, the book, because we were on book tour for our first book, How to Feed a Family, mm-hmm. and we were speaking to folks across the country on radio shows, and everyone we spoke to said to us, these are all great to have recipes, but we need strategies for making it happen. It's really difficult when you're a parent and you have a busy household to kind of manage all the meals that need to happen in a day, especially when you have school-age kids. And so we really started to notice that people needed not only recipes, but the how-to. How am I going to get dinner on the table when I've got a long, busy day and kids to get to a soccer game? And, you know, so that's really where the book idea came from.
And this really has changed a lot. I'm of the baby boomer generation, and I'm sure people who are of that generation realize how much it's changed. First of all, the demographics of our American society in most households, if there are two parents, are both out of the house during the day. So that makes a tremendous difference right there. Plus, the schedules that kids have these days with soccer and everything else, I mean, it's just nothing like it was a generation or two ago.
Yes, exactly. And that's why we wanted to give not only folks, you know, recipes that were really easy and nutritious. I mean, there is a notion that to eat healthy, it can't taste good or that it's hard. And we don't believe in that at all. All of our recipes are really comfort food driven, but are easy to get on the table. But we also wanted to have strategies. And so we filled the book with strategies that parents can actually use to help them maximize their time in the kitchen so they don't feel like they're spending all their time there when they really don't have the time to put in. And that's why, you know, every meal, and we go from breakfast to dinner and of course snacks, because every kid, you know, constantly needs snacks, mm-hmm. especially kids who have a long day of activities. You want snacks to really count. Every one of those meals, we added a strategy for how to make them happen into the book.
What about, in some cases, not everywhere anymore, but parents still pack a lunch, especially for younger kids. Do you talk about that at all?
Absolutely. We totally talked about lunch, and we talk about how to be a lunch ninja. And we really feel that whatever you do, for God's sakes, don't go in the kitchen and make a lunch. We believe that you should maximize your time in the kitchen, and therefore you should always make school lunches when you're in the kitchen making another meal. This way, you're using your time wisely, you're making less, and you're killing two birds with one stone. So that's one of our big strategies, is that, like, if you're making dinner the night before, make the lunch. And we go into lots of detail about how to do these things and how to organize your kitchen and how to be able to kind of get things done in advance to help your week go along smoother.
We read a lot these days. In fact, I've done several interviews over the past several years about how important it is to get kids eating healthy food at an early age. We now can see that, you know, obesity can start, the seeds of it can be in childhood, in early childhood. So, and of course, you know, the
absolutely.
Last thing you want to do is tell kids this is healthy for you, because they tend to be picky, right?
Yeah, it's true. And we address picky eating a lot. And one of the number one things we say is, first of all, don't call them picky at all. Because as soon as you give the kid the permission to settle into a role, they'll take it. They'll be like, well, I'm not going to eat that. I'm a picky eater. And so really it's really difficult to deal with picky eaters, because as parents we work so hard and we put so much effort into everything that we do. When you do put something in front of a picky eater and they kind of turn their nose up, it's heartbreaking. Like, I get it. It took a lot of work to get that food in front of them. And the last thing you want to have them do is turn their nose up. But the number one thing we say is to remind parents that picky eating is just a phase, and to try not to give it too much weight, and to try not to let it be heartbreaking for you. Remember when you couldn't get kids to go to sleep through the night and you thought, oh, my God, this kid's never going to sleep? They're going to grow out of their pickiness. You just have to keep coming at them with foods and putting the broccoli in front of them in different ways and working it into other dishes, or pair it with something you know they enjoy. It's always nice to see a friend on the plate when someone new is there, you know. So, and cheese always helps. I mean, I'll eat broccoli that's smothered in cheese, won't you?
Well, I like broccoli, so.
but there's lots of strategies that we do talk about in the book for dealing with picky eating and how to kind of get over the hump. The last thing we want is parents to be short-order cooks and making more than one meal because they have a picky eater at the table. So we talk about how you can kind of plow through that phase and come out the other end with someone who's a bit more of an adventurous eater.
That's very important. I experienced that in my family. I'm not going to talk anything about my siblings, but I experienced.
Yeah, don't call anyone out here.
You call your and again, listeners, if you join us a couple of minutes late, we're talking with Laura Keough, co-author of the School Year Survival Cookbook. The title comes from the fact that really the toughest time of the year is during the school year in terms of not having enough time to do this properly unless you really use a proper strategy.
Absolutely. And especially now, right? We're heading into the holiday season, and now is really when you need strategies that can help you kind of deal with the added pressure that comes with preparing for a holiday season on top of everything else is, you know, the work-life balance. It's really difficult, and, you know, you want to be able to feed your family and give your family kind of the best head start to their days with foods that can help kind of fuel them, and everyone needs help doing that, right?
Some people may be scratching their head just a little bit, Laura, and saying, Laura Keough, where have I seen that name? Where do I know that name? You and your co-author, you're the ones behind the blogs, what do you call it, the Sweet Potato?
We're the Sweet Potato Chronicles.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, we used to be editors at a fashion magazine, and then we had babies, and it was kind of like a life-changing event, and we both had food backgrounds as well, and so we kind of turned our attention to kind of managing our new lives and the fact that kids constantly needed to be fed. And so we started the Sweet Potato Chronicles, where you could get really, our whole focus is to give parents fast, nutritious, easy meals.
Is the blog still exist?
Yes, it does. It's still there, and it's getting a whole bunch of holiday recipes right now.
It's got a very, very catchy name. I love it. The Sweet Potato Chronicles.
Thanks so much. Well, sweet potatoes, we thought sounded cute, and they're super nutritious, so there you go.
Folks, when you think about how many days of the year, you're involved in school activities, every day except the summer, right? The School Year Survival Cookbook. There are well over 100 recipes and lots of road-tested strategies in the book. One of the co-authors is Laura Keough, and it has been a delight to chat with her for the past few minutes. Here on It's Your Turn.
Thanks so much for having me, Dave. It was wonderful.
My pleasure. Thanks, Laura.
Have a great day.
One of our sponsors on the It's Your Turn program, Gone Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. And folks, here we are, December 13th, right? Boy, if you got any packages that have to go out to friends or relatives in other cities or other parts of the country, better get them going pretty quickly here, about a week and a half away from Christmas. Hey, the folks at Gone Postal can help you with last-minute package mailings, and everybody has those, right? Your best intention was to get it done a little bit earlier. Why not let them do the work? What do at Gone Postal Butler? They package your items for shipping. Simple as that. They do the work. And you can ship it any way you want. FedEx, UPS, U.S. Postal Service. They take care of everything. Gone Postal Butler. They're located just off Newcastle Road, 140 Shockey Lane. And that's right behind Kings and Villa Grande, the two restaurants there. Shockey Mini Storage Complex. That's where you'll find them. We'll give you a phone number in a moment. You can call and get more information on their services. They package your items for shipping at Gone Postal Butler. They also have copying service available, scanning, faxing, mailbox rentals, custom boxes. You can pick up a greeting card, even grab a lottery ticket. And sometimes you have to notarize something before it goes out. An official notary is there as well. 140 Shockey Lane, phone number 724-841-0044. 724-841-0044. Gone Postal Butler. Still more to come on the It's Your Turn program today. Our final guest, Kaylin McFarren, will visit with us to talk about her novel, Twisted Threads. That's coming up here momentarily on It's Your Turn. Tomorrow, among our guests, will be Butler County Community College President Dr. Nick Newpower visiting with us. I'm going to be on vacation for a few days, so some other members of the staff here at WISR will be filling in, Kayla and Ryan and Tyler. So we thank them in advance. Dr. Nick Neupower among our guests on tomorrow's program. We'll be right back.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Going to be talking, listeners, about a new novel. It's a psychological thriller. Let's introduce our guest, first of all, who joins us by telephone today, and that is Kaylin McFerrin. Hi, Kaylin. Nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave.
And if you're joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR, that's fine. My name is Dave Malarkey. The title of your latest psychological thriller, and this is actually part of a series. Am I correct on that, Kayla?
Yes, it's number 4 in the series, but they're truly standalone books.
I see. And what's the title of the latest one?
Well, this is called Twisted Threads, and the reason for the twist in it is because there are killers on board a cruise ship, and you're not sure which one is actually killing people, so it's a little bit of a twisted thriller as such.
So this is the 4th in a series. Are all of the previous ones also thrillers?
Yes, they're all adventures and thrillers, and they are typically, it's a series about a couple that are treasure hunters that travel around the world doing all kinds of adventures and finding things. But this particular book breaks off because it's a character that's out of the first novel that I pulled away, and out of the second novel, which is Buried Threads, she is an assassin that was a former geisha that's been brought into the story, and so I'm putting closure into their part of the story.
And her name is Akira Hamada. Am I pronouncing that anywhere close to correctly?
Yes, you are.
So she is formerly a geisha, but no longer?
Yes. What it was is in her storyline, she was a geisha that attempted to kill the head of a Yakuza organization, and her punishment, because she failed, was to become an assassin herself. So he's forced her to take on this role, and in this book, she's on a cruise ship where she's been given her last assignment to eliminate or identify person who was responsible for the Yakuza leader's sister's death. And so if she completes this assignment, she can finally have her vindication. She can get on with her life.
So the Yakuza gang, is this organized crime mob? Is that who we're talking about here?
Yes. In Japan, the Yakuza is the equivalent of the mafia, and so they're still an active organization. They're a little more quiet in Japan, but they still exist. And so this is an opportunity not only to tell this story that's a fictional account, but to educate people about how they operate and basically how they respect and honor each other. And it can, as it continues today, it hasn't changed at all after all these years.
Another of your main characters is Devin Lyons. Tell us a little bit about this character, Kayla.
Okay, Devin Lyons is the love interest in the book, and basically he is out of one of the other books, too, as well. I pulled him out of, he's kind of been mentioned throughout all 3 books, but he is the gal who, and her husband, who are the treasure hunters, he is her brother. And he got himself into a bit of trouble in the first novel where he is a stockbroker that got mixed up in a Ponzi scheme and almost died, and as a result, he doesn't really trust people so much. So, and in this book, he is going on this cruise with his uncle and aunt to kind of make amends with a damaged relationship, and that's when he runs into Akira. So, and inadvertently, he doesn't know it, but she's been sent there to eliminate his aunt and uncle. So she gets real tight with him so that she can follow them around and, you know, and anticipate what they're going to do and find out if they're truly involved.
So is part of the plot, did she know who they were straight away, or did she have to identify them while on the cruise?
She was actually told that there's suspicion that they were involved, but she will not act on it until she's 100% which person was responsible. And so as a result, she tries to get involved in their lives and become very close to them so that she can get close enough to find out if they might directly be involved. And so it's very interesting twist, because the fact is she starts to develop a relationship with this family, starts getting close to them. And on the other hand, she knows that she has to eliminate one of them. So it's kind of a, you know, direct conflict for her to make a decision on what to do. So
did Akira and Devin, did they know each other beforehand, or do they meet on the cruise ship?
They meet on the cruise ship. And so she's familiar with, in the past, she's familiar with his brother and sister. I mean, his brother-in-law and his sister. She has a relationship with him in the past. But she doesn't realize that he's going to be the person she's going to be working with. And so it's kind of an interesting twist in the story that you don't see coming. And so, you know, it makes it really fun for the reader, because anybody who's followed the series will understand who these characters are. But if they haven't, it's easy to pick up this book and get tied into it very quickly.
I understand that there are mysterious deaths that continue to mount up among the people who are on the ship before we reach the climax, the conclusion. Is that correct?
That's correct. There's actually, I don't want to give too much away, but there is actually another murderer on board the ship. And it's been an ongoing thing that the captain kind of looks the other way, and they dismiss a lot of things on this ship, which is not typical for a cruise ship, I want to assure you. Mm-hmm. But he's had a history in the past where he had some incidents happen, and he knows that if anything suspicious or bad happens on board his ship, he could very well lose control of it and lose his job. And so he tries to bury a lot of things that are happening.
This Yakuza gang, which you say is kind of the Japanese equivalent of organized crime here in the United States, are they as violent as this, as your novel sounds? They sound like they're pretty tough characters here.
Well, it's very interesting, because even more recently, there was an article that came out in the newspaper just a few days ago, where there was a temple, very famous temple in Japan, where there was an assassination took place, and it was all done with swords. And so it's not something that is not currently happening. It's just very quiet. It's the organization over in Japan right now is kind of been for many, many years a right hand to the police departments. When they wanted to get rid of certain criminals, they kind of looked the other way and let the Yakuza get involved. And so now, because they've gotten involved with drugs and prostitution, all kinds of things, they've stepped in and they've kind of squelched them. And so you don't hear a lot of stories, but there's a lot of things that still happen behind scenes that are pretty violent. And so, yeah, it's still current.
Devin Lyons and his relatives, his aunt and uncle, are they Americans?
Yes. What it is his aunt is actually from England, and so they have an estate, and they live very well in England, and so that's why they've invited him to come on this cruise with them. And so it's an opportunity to get close to him again when they've had an estranged relationship, and so this is a chance to kind of bond and get back together with him. But he has no idea how far this story's going to go.
I was wondering how Akira Hamada from Japan ended up on a cruise ship in the Caribbean. Or maybe there's a lot of Japanese tourists who take cruises in the Caribbean. I don't know.
Well, they know. I think, when the story starts at the beginning, the mobster guy, the Yakuza leader, he he's gotten word that the person that they believe is responsible for his sister's death is traveling on this ship. And he sees it as the one opportunity where he's out at sea and there's no way this guy can escape. So it's a one chance to send the assassin there to get rid of him. And so she's been sent there strictly on assignment, but she gets caught up in all the fun and that goes on a cruise ship. So I think it gives people insight. It's very interesting. The readers who have read it have told me after reading it, they not only enjoyed the story, but they all want to go on cruises now. So I guess I told it pretty well.
Kaylin McFerrin chatting with us, author of Twisted Threads. How long have you been a writer, Kaylin?
I've been writing for about 16 years now, and so this is the fifth book that I've put out, and it took me a while to get started just because I have been writing short stories and poetry for a number of years and had done some small publications that had gotten into newspapers and such, but I hadn't tackled getting into writing novels until probably about 10 years ago where I really got serious into it, and so I try to put out a book a year if I can, and I'm currently working on a new one right now.
Did you have a prior life before you started writing seriously?
Oh, yes. My husband is a Japanese businessman who's very successful. He makes Yoshida sauces that go in all the grocery stores. And I helped him get the business started many years ago and did all his PR and marketing and so forth. And so that's where I got a little bit of my writing experience. But we grew the company to 23 different companies. And as a result, my children went on to school and graduated and did their own things. And then I kind of sat back and kind of had to redefine myself and find my identity, and I did that through writing. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That explains your knowledge then of Japanese culture, which certainly came in handy in writing this book.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I've been fortunate. I've been able to travel a lot. So I've had an opportunity to meet people from all walks of life, which helped me incorporate them into stories. So I tell people all the time when I meet you, be careful. You know, you might end up in one of my novels.
This is number 4, I think you said, in the Threads
series.
Yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And with another one, at least one more in the pipeline. Psychological.
This is the last one in the series.
Oh,
I'm going on to do a sci-fi now. So I'm going a little different direction in the next book.
Oh, I'm sorry. I misunderstood you. Well, the title of this latest one, folks, is Twisted Threads. The author is Kaylin McFerrin, and we've been chatting with her for the last few minutes. You're on It's Your Turn on WISR. Nice to meet you. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I hope you have a wonderful holiday.
And you too. Yeah, thanks. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 43, the pick 3, 879, pick 4, 6238, and the pick 5, 57235. Wild ball for each of those is 8. The treasure hunt, 3, 7, 20, 24, and 29. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $30,000.
Have you noticed anyone in the family struggling to hear? Maybe in a crowded room or in a noisy room, they're having a little difficulty picking up conversation. It happened. Or maybe they're asking to turn up the TV a little louder when it's already too loud for somebody else in the room. Maybe it's you. Well, if you've noticed a problem, maybe you ought to think about getting checked out. We would certainly recommend Hearing Aid Service by Kelly for personalized one-on-one care. Kelly will take the time, all the time it needs, to make sure that everything is the way you want it, not only from a hearing standpoint, but comfort as well. One thing she is not interested in whatsoever, and that is selling you the highest-priced hearing aid. No. Your hearing aid will actually be measured to fit your ear. Remember, this is personalized one-on-one care. It all begins with a complimentary consultation. You know, so many people who have made the change or have consulted with Kelly, they're very, very happy that they did so. Why not call her? Call the hearing aid lady. Call Hearing Aid Service by Kelly. K-E-L-L-I-E. The phone number is 724-756-4327. 724-756-4327. 756-4327. Hearing aid service by Kelly.
Whether you're a backyard car fixer-upper or an auto repair shop, Milich Auto Wrecking is still the place to go for new and used auto and truck parts. They have been for over 40 years. And compared to factory prices, you'll save big bucks. Milich Auto Wrecking is neatly organized and will tell you immediately if they have the part or not. Open Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5, it's Milich Auto Wrecking, Route 38, the Oneida Valley Road. Look for the big black and red sign. Stop by or call 287-1001. And yes, old Uncle Fred still goes to Milich.
Admit it, you thought about trying a personal trainer before, but the what-ifs kept you from actually doing it. Let Applewood Chiropractic Health and Fitness Center help you make that leap with ease. During the month of December, be one of the first 10 people to schedule a 30-minute session with elite personal trainer and lifestyle coach Julie Saylor, and that session is free. No commitment, no strings attached. See firsthand what the benefits of having a personal trainer and